Hello and welcome everyone to the Big One Podcast. This is B-Boy, and with me for this week.
Baby G coming down the backstretch.
Yes, just Baby G this week. No new guy to be found. He did not qualify for the race, from what I heard. All right, well, we're the Big One Podcast. We talk about motorsports, mostly motorsports, sometimes beer, sometimes like life, you know? We work in some other topics, but mostly motorsports. You can follow us on Twitter at @PodcastBigOne or email us at podcastbigone@gmail.com. We just started off some kind of season-long predictions. That's pretty cool. You can see some of that on Twitter. Come follow us. Come along for the ride. It's a magical thing. Speaking of magical things, our sponsor this week is whatever sponsor NBC wants to shove down, Fox wants to shove down our throat this week.
It's going to be a lot of them.
I we can jump right into the Fox broadcast kind of stuff, but like, I think I wouldn't have problem with commercials. This is a very ambiguous statement. I wouldn't have problem with commercials if they weren't the same goddamn commercials. Like, I know you and I watch a lot of NBA. I'm done hearing about the Fratellis with the cheese.
Yeah.
Oh
yes.
My God.
Good God.
I'm done with their cheese shop. Just totally done. If it's a real cheese shop, I want to do whatever the opposite of supporting it is.
We can talk about some of the commercials a little bit now while we're into it. The front loading of the commercials in the actual 500 itself just drove me absolutely nuts. We're seeing three laps of racing, and then we're going to a solid 3-4 minutes of commercials coming back for 2-3 laps. I understand what they're trying to do, save up for the final stage, giving us a lot of non-interrupted coverage, but at a certain point, I was watching on Discord with a couple friends, and they're like, are we going to see any of stage one here, or just watching a commercial fest?
I think I agree. I'm glad that they front loaded. Like, I'm all for that. I think some of the things that drove me a little mad were that, so back when they added stage breaks, they did that so that the cautions would come out then, and then they would have time to do the commercials then. Right. And like, no break in the action. Like, that's great. It sucked worse at this Daytona because there were so many long green flag runs. And so there was a lot of green flag action. And then it would come to a point where it was like, well, it's still green, but the action is heating up. And they were like, well, throw the commercial, you know? And it's not Fox's fault. This is the biggest race that they host all year, the most viewership. It pays out the most. They need to make their money on this event more than any other event the whole year. I get it. I totally get it. It just sucks. Like, it sucks. It sucks as a race fan.
It's not great, but Fox has got to do what they got to do, right? You're only going to get so many commercial sponsors for your biggest race of the year, and you might as well cash in now, and hopefully they're not as aggressive the rest of the front half of the season that Fox is covering here.
Yeah. Some things that still annoy me are, like, I don't know when they stopped doing this, but at one point they used to break back from commercials if, like, a caution happened, right? And they threw to that one commercial, I think it was like in stage two, and they just didn't break back. They just did a full 2 minutes of commercials while we're watching like cars getting cleaned up and stuff off.
Yeah, cars were just getting absolutely destroyed, wrecked. You saw it on, I think that was during a side-by-side.
It was a side-by-side, yeah.
And everyone I was watching with was like, just cut out of the side-by-side, just come back. What happened? And by the time they came back, the wreck was kind of all... not all cleaned up, but the majority of it, cars were already being towed to pit row, or they were already limping
into pit road.
Drivers are out.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about side-by-side, just because, like, the network is using it as, like, these aren't real commercials. Like, you're okay. You can still see the action. But it's like, well, if I don't know what's going on, then it's not that much better. That said, I could always turn on MRN radio. And I have this kind of ties to my question, so I'm going to probably, like, drop it here. Until we get to later on, a later section. But, like, yeah, there's things to be said about the amount of commercials. You know, I know someone did a little study thing on Twitter and showed that 2001, 2010, and 2023 had about the same number of commercials. But they only counted, like, full-screen commercials. They didn't count side-by-sides. And so, like, to me, like, you're still doing it when you do side-by-sides. That still counts. If it's a half a point, I don't know how you're going to score it, whatever. It still counts. And that's way different than 2001 and 2010. So,
we'll get into the commercials a little bit later, but let's talk some speed weeks, race recaps. Do you want to jump right into qualifying and the duels?
Yep. So qualifying, you know, pretty eventful. Alex Bowman gets the pole. Kyle Larson gets second. It looked like Bowman's car was just like miles better than everyone else. Like, I think on the first round, I had calculated like the distance between him and second place was the same distance between second place and 23rd, I think it was, which is just ridiculous. That's just how much faster his, or how well trimmed out his car is. But he also just like, he holds a steady wheel, or holds a pretty wheel, as some people say. Like, he just knows how to keep it really, really clean and tight at a track where you're basically just going all out the whole time and staying next to the line, right? So
six consecutive year for Bowman up on the front too. So yeah. That's absolutely amazing. Six years in a row to be on the front row of the Daytona 500. That's quite the feat.
Yeah, Hendrick cares about it. Hendrick has like swept the front row. I think like it's got to be like at least 8 of the last 10 times, and you probably could extend that a little bit further back, and it would become even more ridiculous. But they care a lot about trimming out their cars for qualifying and then coming back and like making them better later on. Now, the one thing that is interesting about qualifying is like this is the first time in the cars for some drivers. Like Travis Pastrana, it was his, even though he was going to run the truck race later, no practice, no nothing. He just jumps in and has to immediately qualify. Same with Jimmy Johnson coming back, granted a lot more experience in his arena, but Travis Pastrana hadn't been in a cup car in like a decade, I want
to
say.
It's got to be terrifying to have your first hot lap be, this is qualifying, there's no practice, you're jumping right in, you either qualify or you don't, and he did it.
Yeah, he qualified in. I was rooting for him. I was rooting for him and Jimmy Johnson, and they were the two that qualified in. I thought the most interesting thing was that so many of the drivers, and maybe they were doing this last year and I just didn't notice, but like so many of the drivers were blocking the window gap basically between where the, what do they call that? The A post maybe? No, that's not it. The A post is the further back, but whatever. Where the window starts and where the window net begins, they were blocking it with their hand. So they were one-handing it around the whole racetrack unless they got out of shape or something and just holding their hand there to try and block it. And, I mean, it must make a difference. Clearly enough people were doing it, so.
Yeah, if it wasn't making a difference, there would only be one or two fluke drivers doing it, but the little bit of practice I saw, or qualifying, excuse me, was certainly what you're talking about.
Yeah, just about everyone. I mean, again, unless your car was out of control and you needed two hands on the wheel, like, you were doing it, so. Brings us right into Thursday, the Blue-Green Vacation Duels. I like that you're adding the sponsorship here, too. Duel 1, What happened?
Ty Gibbs speeding on pit road. That was a lot of the talk was just don't make a mistake during the duels. Drive well. Get yourself in position for the 500. Don't do anything too crazy. And Ty Gibbs right away, as soon as they mentioned that, he's speeding on pit road. So showing some of that immaturity that we talked about in previous episodes. Other than that, duel one was extremely calm. They were kind of just towing the line, driving around, being safe.
Mm-hmm.
This typically seems to happen at the duels. One duel's pretty calm, another duel's like balls to the wall is crazy, and duel one, Logano one, pushed to the finish by Blaney.
Yeah.
Definitely the calmer one. One thing to note on duel one, Zane Smith races way into the 500, so
yep.
Guy with a lot of good Xfinity experience, working his way up to Cup now this year, and he made it into the 500, so that was cool to see.
Yeah, actually he was truck. Is where he's been.
Oh, truck. That's right. Not even Xfinity.
I think he did run Xfinity this weekend, though. I forget. I'd have to go and look it up.
Yes, he was in the Xfinity race.
Was he? Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe he did all three races then. But yeah, he ended up finishing, I think, like fourth in the truck race. So I mean, he's good at Daytona for sure. But cool. Yeah. Beyond that, like you were saying, kind of a calmer duel one. I do find it interesting, though, like you were saying, that always it is always one is calmer and one is like more racy, and like it flips back and forth. I think it really just depends on who's in the race, right? Like certain drivers are more willing to like go for it kind of thing, and yeah, race two saw Suarez wrecking Kyle Busch. That was a big deal. There was also a debris caution, if you remember, pretty early.
That was the weirdest thing. So. A right side window just came flying off. They didn't really ever identify what car. They just kind of highlighted it, and you just saw him going right down the backstretch, and one of the panels on a window just literally flows off and lands on the tracks. So they had to throw a caution pretty early into that one on lap 7.
Yep. Austin Hill was caught up in that Kyle Busch wreck. It was a pretty tough wreck, and a couple guys caught up in it. Travis Pastrana was also caught up in that, but you know, again, had already raced his way in a qualifying. They ended up repairing that car. Kyle Busch, they ended up going to a backup. I meant to say this too about like the duels being a little bit calmer is like, since last year I think it was more of a part shortage, but this year I think it's they're realizing they can get by with it. They don't bring multiple backup cars, really. Like, there was the days in the 2000s and the 90s and stuff where you'd always bring two cars. Every racetrack, you'd bring two cars because something could happen in qualifying or in practice or something, and you don't want to have that backup, right? Nowadays, it's like one per team. So, like, even for like a four-car team, they may only bring one. They'll bring a lot of pieces, right, to be able to put together a car or fix a car. They'll only bring one full backup car, really. And with Kyle Busch wrecking out, he went to that backup, and I thought it was interesting that backup was wrapped for Austin Dillon, and so it had a three on it, and they wrapped over the three, so you could actually see the outline of a three in the wrapping.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was like a close-up picture from pit lane that someone took. So,
I wonder if they just need less backup cars because this new car is just so sturdy and so strong and so repairable that you'll see some guys hit pretty hard into the wall or get involved in some pretty nasty wrecks, and they kind of just take it to pit lane, work on it for the allotted amount of time, and it seems to kind of just get out there and drive. As long as you don't rub a tire or get a tire down with some of the damage, you can pretty much drive these things as long as you don't take too hard of a hit or head on or something into the wall.
Exactly. And I think, you're dead on. That's the biggest reason why I think they don't need to bring the full backups, and they can just bring a bunch of, you know, the nose piece and the individual door pieces and back, you know, rear bumper piece, and they can replace those if they need to. So, Almirola wins duel two. So that means he starts fourth, behind Larson. Bowman gets the push from Logano right out of the start. But let's talk truck racing before we get to Sunday's race. NextEra Energy 250, what happened?
How much of the truck race did you catch? Did you catch the whole thing?
I caught the whole thing of every race.
Same on my end. So yeah. This was quite the interesting race. You know, they got green. Two laps in, there's a caution for rain. Very light rain, but makes sense to throw the caution. You don't want to be at a super speedway and be running anything in rain. So got going again. Lap 6, another caution for rain. Story kind of continued. Lap 30, red flag lap, wreck, rain. Just a lot of up and down stop start to this race all the way around. So the one thing I had to note, Carruth, first kind of time on the big stage here, he made a really aggressive move up the middle, splitting the two lanes, and ended up just kind of wrecking. I don't know if he just caught some air on the truck or what happened there, but he kind of just got loose and wrecked out. But
he put his nose in there, and the other two drivers didn't expect him to. And when that happens, you're taking the air, like, you know, the air is coming around your car, but there's already so little air coming to your car from the noses of the other two cars that air is like gone between you and the two cars that you're now trying to split the gap on, and it pulls those other two cars into you, creates a vacuum, right? And so, like, just a really bad move and way too aggressive, way too early. I mean, even late, that move probably would have resulted in the same thing. But that early, especially, you just got to back out of it, and that's something he'll learn. So,
yeah, young driver, he's probably excited to be in it, thought he was going to make a big move, and it didn't work out for him. But all in all, the race never finished. 41 yellow laps, 38 green laps. So, unfortunately, the rain just caught up and kind of ended this race early. So they stuck it out. I mean, I was with the coverage for quite some time, and they just at a certain point just had to call it. So unfortunate
is
for the fans that were there, but the racing action that was green flag was awesome.
Was good.
Like,
really good.
Seeing the trucks on the super speedway and just in general, the trucks are super, super entertaining. You got a lot of really young drivers. The things look like they're hard as hell to drive. They're wiggling, wobbling all over the track. So it's unfortunate they couldn't finish this thing or do more green flag racing, because what there was of it was really, really good.
Yeah, agreed. The trucks are always fun, and they are super squirrely. I think, like, Pastrana said something around the lines of, because he was in that race as well, he said something around the lines of, like, the truck was actually harder to race than the cup car. The cup car was a bit more into the speedway, which makes sense. It's lower to the ground. It doesn't have a light back end. It's got bigger tires, right? Like, everything about it means that it's going to race a little bit easier. But that said, he also spun out in the cup race and you know, not the truck race. So you know, I think no matter which of these cars you're driving, it's not easy. Nobody can really pick it up. I mean, Daytona is probably the one racetrack in which you have the best chance of picking it up, like Daytona and Talladega. But like, it's still really, really hard, and these guys work very, very hard to get into these races. So cool. Yeah. So with that, we had the exact same winner as last year, Chandler Smith.
What about Xfinity on Saturday? Beef, it's What's for Dinner, one of my favorite sponsors of any of the races on the entire schedule. So the Beef, it's What's for Dinner 300. I only caught the second half of this race, so I don't know if you caught anything in the first half.
Yeah, so this one I caught, now that I'm thinking about it, truck, I was like moving around a lot, and so there were points where I was watching on my phone but like also walking. So like actually that one I had missed a little bit of the green flag or was distracted. I watched the whole Xfinity race from my camper, so like I did see all of that one. Yeah, they were running around single vial for a long period of time. They would work really, really, really hard to get like a good run going, and then a guy would maybe pick off like one or two guys, and then like that line would just disappear. It would never establish, which kind of sucks. But overall, pretty good race. I think mostly saved by the finish.
Yeah, the finish was incredible. I caught the most of the second half of the race, like I said, and eerily similar to last year. Two laps to go, they're getting really aggressive, and into the wall goes Sam Meyer, and he flips up on the top of top of the roof and skids for a little bit. Thankfully, he did flip over, so it wasn't as bad as it could be. It did flip over, land on the four tires. But man, second year in a row for this Xfinity race that someone goes up and over in a big wreck near the end. So scary stuff.
It happens. It happens. Just how it is, especially Daytona. Austin Hill walking away with a win, a consolation prize to having not gotten to get into the 500 with his wreck in the duel, which sucked. I mean, we didn't really expand on this, but Connor Daly made it in, and Connor Daly with the money team was like down by a whole lap or like two laps, I think, when Austin Hill wrecked, which is ridiculous that like Austin Hill then doesn't get to make the race. But Austin Hill gets a consolation prize. He wins the Xfinity Beef, It's What's for Dinner 300. Get some nice tomahawk chops. Did you see that for the trophy?
I did. That was pretty cool.
It's great. It's so good. Granted, I don't want the ones that have been sitting out in the sun like that all day, but
no, I agree. Sure, they're not going to be throwing that thing on the grill.
Yeah. but cool. Moves us on to Sunday. What happened to the 500?
Sunday. What a fun day, man. The Daytona 500 day is just cool. I had a little bit of the pre-race coverage on. There was a lot of pre-race coverage, so I only saw part of it. I mean, you can't sit there and watch the TV for 6 hours of this stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Charlotte Flair in the pace car was interesting. I'm a big WWE fan, wrestling fan in general, so easy crossover there with their Friday Night SmackDown. Get Charlotte Flair out there. You know, she's from the South.
Yeah, but I think it's cool when those celebrities show up, you know, because they're promoting something that they have. Although I do really like it when like a celebrity shows up for no reason, like Pete Davidson was there, and for all intents and purposes,
just wanted to be there.
I didn't know that he's a fan in any way. But he was there, and he was wearing a Martin Truex jacket, which I thought was interesting. But I guess it makes sense given he's a Staten Island guy, and Truex is from Jersey. So
one thing I did notice is the Daytona 500 is back from a fan perspective. The grandstands looked absolutely packed all the way to the top. The infield was absolutely packed. Some of the podcasts that I listened to, specifically Dale Jr. Download, they were talking about how amazing the energy was at the track and at the surrounding bars, restaurants, you know, in Daytona and some of the surrounding communities. Like, a lot of events where drivers are there, legends are there, fans are coming to meet and greets. Like, obviously, it's been tough the past 2-3 years, COVID, all that good stuff. But to me, it just looked like this looked like a primetime event again. And that was fantastic to see as far as popularity. I don't know, you know, the ratings weren't spectacular, but we've seen that on basically any major event outside of the Super Bowl. Ratings are just down because less people are watching cable TV, over-the-air TV than they ever have. And the one thing that was a positive for the ratings, I'll touch on this real quickly, was the share. The share was good. So share was up, but overall was down. And I don't know if that's good or bad long term for the sport, but God knows how many people were watching illegal streams with no commercials. So you can't really just rely on ratings anymore. You kind of just have to go by the buzz.
Yeah, and I'd say, I mean, the share being up is the best way to like look at it because of what you're saying in terms of like the overall viewership on a Sunday afternoon is down. True in the NBA, true in the NHL. Every sport is affected by this. Even your normal primetime network television is affected by this. So overall, just having a greater share is great. They did cap out at like 10.1 million viewers. Again, very estimated numbers on a lot of this, but 10.1 million is huge, and that was actually bigger than last year. That's good to hear. Cap. So they were down 8% overall on the like average viewership for the race, which was about like 8.6 million, I think it was, or maybe 8.3, I forget. But yeah, down 8%. But again, the share was up, and I think that's the bigger deal. In terms of like the energy at the track, I think a lot of that like extra energy just comes from having such a good season last year. Everyone comes into the year thinking their driver can win a championship, not just win maybe a race, win a championship. Everyone feels that way right now. And then you have someone like Ricky Stenhouse come out and win the first race. And so, you know, that's exactly what the people are buzzing about and why they're so excited. And that's exactly kind of what NASCAR wants to see, this parity. Right. And so, overall, you know, I think it was like the sixth sold-out event, grandstands-wise, for Daytona in a row. I don't know how many times they've sold out the infield, but they sold out all infield, VIP, everything for this one. So, you know, that's great. That's just Daytona. That's just how it is. But yeah, everything else about the event was trending upward, in my opinion.
What about the racing action itself? We can talk about, you know, stage wins in a little bit, but I was really surprised that you mentioned it a little bit when we were talking about Xfinity, but anytime someone got a little bit of a run or made a move, it just immediately stalled out. Like you'd see a guy make a move, they kind of pass one or two cars, and then the energy just died. So like we didn't see like years past. I'm used to seeing with some of the super speedway racing, you get a line with a little bit of energy and you can see 8-10 cars just go and push super hard, and they'll just wipe out, you know, half of the row that's side by side to them. But this year, anytime someone pulled down to make a move, there was just no energy. It just completely died. So I thought that made for a little bit of a, I wouldn't want to say boring race, but very different race. You didn't see the big freight training happening that you usually do. It was a lot of two solid rows just kind of racing hard, pushing hard, especially in the first two stages, being smart, not being overly aggressive in the quarters or any corners or anything like that. So I thought the racing action was a little bit different than I'm used to seeing at Daytona.
Yeah, I mean, it was similar to last year, right? It basically, everyone realized during the duels last year, oh shit, this is how like restrictor plate racing is going to be in this car, is it's really hard to get track position, and if I'm in a line, I'm better off staying in this line than trying to establish a new line. Like, you have to, when you take those chances, you have to really know who you're getting in line with. There were a number of times where someone pulled out in front and became the front car. This happened to Bubba Wallace a couple times after he got back in the lead lap. Was like he would become the front car in a line, but his car was damaged and it couldn't run as hard as some other cars. So you really had to like choose your partners, choose who was in the line with you, and be like, this is the line that's going to bring me slightly forward. And then you would see like, you know, the outside line work or the inside line work. It wasn't one like outside or inside was better. It was just who was in that line was what made the difference. And again, because track position was so important, people weren't willing to get out of line and then suffer the consequences of exactly what you're talking about. So,
yeah, stage winners here. We got Keselowski took stage one. Chastain took stage two. The stage two finish was amazing.
Super good. Yeah.
Some of the best racing of the entire weekend, I thought, was on stage two. Absolutely fantastic finish to stage two. And then third stage, we got our typical super speedway finish, right? A lot of wrecking, a lot of overtime, because at a certain point it's go time, and these guys are looking to win the Daytona 500. So it was a double overtime. Stenhouse brings home the win.
Yep. Yeah, it kind of sucked. I mean, not the finish, not the fact that Stenhouse won. I'm glad for Stenhouse. He had kind of like a upswing. I think it was either 2018 or 2017. He had kind of an upswing year in which he won a Daytona July race and a Talladega race in the same season, and like really looked like he was gonna, you know, establish himself as a good driver within the series, and then hadn't done anything really since. And then moved over to JTG Doherty, which is, you know, especially now with Michael Jordan in the sport, he doesn't get a lot of attention at all as an owner. But he becomes the first African American owner to win a race at Daytona, which is pretty sweet. Overall, though, what I think was disappointing was having those two overtimes. Like, I was really looking forward to that RFK-RCR duel, because that's what essentially what we were set up for and we were getting until Suarez spun out. Which, granted, they had to throw the caution there. Suarez was just going to be stuck on the track. There was nothing else that they could do. You got to do what you got to do in that situation. But it does suck because, not that I want to see Kyle Busch win, but, like, when you've had that storied of a career, like, just same as Dale Earnhardt winning his first in his 20th try, right? Like, you want to see it eventually. And I felt like that was going to be his to duel out and win. So,
good finish for Stenhouse. Cool to see him get up on, you know, the podium there. And I agree. I was a little, you know, it's, I would like to see one of these super speedways be a 500 mile race and not single overtime, double overtime. I don't want to get into this too much, but at a certain point, the wrecking at the end of these super speedway races is getting a little tiring. And Kyle Busch had a good quote. I don't know if it's a good quote. He had a typical hothead Kyle Busch quote. He said, you know, looks like you're up front, you got spun, I don't even know who won the race. And then they tell him that Stenhouse wins, and he goes, of course, you know, Stenhouse packs into it, which I don't like that, taking a shot at another driver like that.
It was just clear
frustration. And
yeah, Stenhouse, I mean, we've talked about him kind of jokingly before these super speedways throughout the 4 years we've had this podcast, but essentially he either brings home a checkered flag or gets really close to it, or he brings back the steering wheel. Like, he gets really aggressive, but he's really good at these tracks. It's deserved, in my opinion. And so I don't support that part of Kyle Busch's statement, but I understand that he was very frustrated. He led at the 500 mile mark, the 200 lap mark, you know. He finished the distance. If this was 1994, he would have won. Right. So.
Right. They weren't doing green flag checkers back then.
Exactly.
So, any final thoughts on the 500 itself?
No, good race. I like, anytime we start with the clash at the Coliseum and then we go to Daytona, I'm like, man, I just want some real racing. And we got some real fucking racing come up right out of the gate right here, going to California Auto Club Speedway. So excited about this, man.
Yeah, Auto Club. So we want to jump right into it. Let's talk Auto Club, and then we can do storylines in a little bit.
Let's do that. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so Auto Club Speedway, we got Xfinity on Saturday at 5 Eastern, Cup at 3:30 on Sunday, also Eastern. We've got no truck race at Auto Club this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking for, laps, the Xfinity Production Alliance Group 300, 35 Stage 1, 35 Stage 2, 80 in Stage 3, and then Cup. Pala Casino, which, don't know where the Pala Casino is. I assume it's somewhere in California, but we've got 65 Stage 1, 65 Stage 2, and 70 for Stage 3.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It looks like the Pala Casino is in Pala, California, which is probably pretty close to the speedway.
There you go, that makes sense.
I have to imagine.
Previous winners for this one, so we got last year, 2022, Kyle Larson. 2021, looks like they didn't run. 2020 was Bowman. And 2019, Kyle Busch. So that's last three winners at Auto Club.
Nice. Yeah. Before that, it was 2018, I saw Larson win his second ever race there at Auto Club, personally with my parents, which was pretty cool, being a big Larson fan that I am. Yeah, and drove all the way from Vegas, and after having a full Vegas day, and was very, very tired, and like drinking a ton of coffee, and got to my parents' hotel room at like 2 a.m. and was just like, yeah, that sucked. And then it was all worth it in the end. So,
very cool. Yeah, one fun fact about this one. So last time at Auto Club before they're reconfiguring to a short track. So I think a lot of people have been talking about, we're not really sure what the end goal is here of making Auto Club a short track. Right now it's a 2-miler, which is a little unique on the schedule.
Yep.
Don't have many 2-milers out there. So not really sure what their strategy is here, taking this to a short track, especially with the state of the short track racing not being exactly
the best
super
right now.
Super exciting last season.
Yeah,
hopefully
I think
it's better with
the,
some of the package tweaks this year, but we'll see.
Yeah, they made this choice back in like 2019, I want to say. I remember in the 2020 race them like talking about Auto Club and being like, this, you know, they're making that choice, they're going to go to the short track, it's going to happen here in the next couple of years. And then like COVID hit, right? And then they weren't on the schedule at all the next year, and felt like a perfect time for them to do it. But yeah, overall, it's just, you know, fans like short tracks. That's the biggest reason. That all said, a track where it's located, where Auto Club is located, so just for folks to know if you've never been there, you fly into LA, you sit in LA traffic for about an hour, and you drive about 2.5 hours total to get out to this track. It's not close in terms of like to LA, not like the Coliseum, right? Which is like downtown kind of thing, or you know, in LA, greater LA. This is way outside. This is way in the desert as you're heading towards, you know, Vegas.
Oh, it's right by Rancho Cucamonga, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, it's pretty far out there. You know, they can put a short track in. Will people come? Who knows? To me, to reconfigure a speedway, the only thing you're really saving is the stands, right? You already have some stands. And I get that that's a big part of the expense. But, like, is that part of the expense worth saving versus building a whole new track or restoring a track that already exists in an area that is more apt to go to these races? That all said, people want to, or NASCAR wants to bring the races to audiences that don't get to see them all the time, which is why we do the Coliseum race. So
it's interesting to me that you go Coliseum out in LA area, go all the way out to Daytona. The next week you're right back in, you know, Southern California. It's got to just be because weather-wise, they're assuming this time of year you're going to get a nice, clean race. Probably no rain. Weather's going to be nice. People are going to be willing to come out. So that's got to be the reason why. It's just kind of odd you hit the SoCal market two times in like a month here.
Yeah, we're on the West Coast swing now, right? We're in Auto Club, and then we're in Phoenix and Las Vegas, and I'm probably missing somewhere. Those are the ones I can think of anyway, but... Yeah, we're on that West Coast swing, which is not like helpful. The fact that they, you know, package these West Coast races together is not helpful for the teams. They still have to drive, you know, a truck to North Carolina and then back to like go get the new car or whatever. These are very different tracks. So like, again, doing a West Coast swing isn't like it is when you're doing it in the NBA or NHL or something. And it's like, oh, I can stay on the West Coast. I can get adjusted to the hours and it's gonna be good.
Right.
So. Yeah, there's not really much reason to do it this way other than, like you said, the weather being good. So, cool. I think that brings us right into our Smart and Hard picks. Without New Guy this week, he'll have to pick last. His stuff will be talked about next week when we recap how everyone did. But let's recap the Daytona 500 first. Average starting position or average finishing position from the 500 for our Smart and Hard picks. Mine is 25.5. I had Denny and Byron. Byron finished very badly. New Guy had Blaney and Pastrana. Pastrana, strong heart pick. Really strong heart pick. Average of 9.5. So really good.
That's very
good.
Solid.
Yep. Great way to start the year. And Baby G with Kyle Busch pick and the Bubba Wallace pick. Again, two drivers that were looking really good if it doesn't go to like overtime and can keep going. You averaged at 19.5. But, you know, we're only 1 week into the year. There's a lot of time to catch up. I say that being the person that's in last, so...
My picks were looking fantastic, and just like that, the big one happens, and they weren't.
Yep. all right, well, that brings us to making our picks for this week. I think you went first last time, so I'm going to go first this time. Let's see here. Oh, let me bring up the standings, because I need...
Smart is top 10. Hart is outside of the top 10, if I recall.
Hart is outside of the top 10, yep. Which Smart can also be anyone. Like, it could be outside the top 10 as well. You don't have to be inside the top 10. But let's see here. Standings. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I wait until we read the standings to actually know the standings, especially this early on in the season. But I'm going to go Smart pick. I like Larson here. Oh, no. Actually, no. I'm not going to go with Larson. Let's go with Bowman. I'm going to go with Bowman.
You stole mine. I'm going to have to jump in on someone else here. I'm going to do this on the fly.
Nice.
Let's go with the 20, Christopher Bell.
That's a good one. Finished the year pretty strong on these slightly larger tracks. All right, well, I'm going to go with Larson on my second pick then.
All right, Hart, I'm going to take the 8, Kyle Busch.
All right.
Strong showing at Daytona. I think it's just going to come right back at Auto Club and do well again.
Yeah, potentially. Cool. And we'll see what New Guy ends up picking, and we'll cover that next week. Let's go into some NASCAR storylines that we kind of skipped over. That was my fault. But, yeah, so both of the Trackhouse Racing guys extend for multi-year contracts. I think I saw something about Ross Chastain getting, like, a really long deal. Like something that was – they're making a big commitment to him. Suarez, multi-year contract, probably, like, a 3 or 4 year contract. That's what a lot of guys get. and they're now set to stay with the team through 2025. So that's I guess it's only two seasons then for Suarez minimum.
Yes, Suarez only got that one win still in his career, so I think he's a good driver for Trackhouse. He's a really good driver. I think he just needs a little bit of luck, and he'll be right up there in the top if he gets a little bit of luck. But cool to see both guys, Trackhouse committing to their two guys and trying to build their brand around them.
Yep.
One interesting thing I don't have in the notes is I thought I read that Trackhouse is potentially looking at a third charter. They don't have any timeline in this, but they said their long-term plan is to get another charter.
That makes sense.
So Trackhouse really looking to build that team and flush it out with a third driver at some point.
Everything, I mean, there is probably some little cost differences in operating three teams versus four teams versus two teams. But overall, you know, the more teams you operate, in the same reason that, like, corporations consolidate, is, like, it's generally cheaper, right, to operate another team. And so it makes sense. I think Hamlin and 2311 have talked about that as well, about, you know, they just added their second charter but 2 years ago. But, like, talking about maybe having a third car, building a big facility, like, these are the teams that are bringing the money into the sport right now. And so, yeah, that's good. That's good to see.
Another driver with an extension, Alex Bowman, three-year extension with Hendrick through 2026. Also the sponsor of that car, Ally, another five-year deal. So Ally is going to be on a Hendrick car through 2028.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it makes sense, the Bowman extension, because Ally likes him. I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve it otherwise. I think, like, with Hendrick, your bar is so high. And with Bowman and Byron, like, it's basically, if you don't win a championship, you're considered not a good driver at Hendrick, and that's where they're at. That said, you know, Ally supports him, and that's why he's going to get that three-year contract extension. He got it the morning of the qualifying, so then he went out there and put it on the pole, too, so that was pretty sweet.
Yeah, one thing I'm curious about with these sponsorships is, so there was a big Ally spot during the Daytona 500 race itself, so sponsoring a car slash team, does that get you anything as far as TV commercials, or is that like a separate buy by,
totally separate,
you know, Ally Bank, for example?
Yeah, totally separate.
Totally
buy.
Separate, right?
Now, that said, you could be a partner with NASCAR, right? You could be the official bank of NASCAR, which I don't know if Ally is or if they have an official
bank.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell
you. But some of that sometimes will net you at least a commercial or two or a mention during the race or something like that, right? Like, you know, Coca-Cola, Xfinity, those are some of those associate sponsors of NASCAR that you see quite a bit throughout the race, and rightfully so. So, but yeah, that's still out of pocket, right? That's a totally different out of pocket expense than, like, sponsoring an actual team. Speaking of Coca-Cola, by the way, we didn't have this in the notes, but Chase Elliott's now a Coca-Cola driver.
That's right. They got a whole bunch of drivers now. It's five or six at least.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be a lot. They used to have a big old stable back in the 90s. Hell, We had a big old poster in our garage that had all the Coca-Cola drivers on it, you know, back in the days of Dale Jarrett and Dale Earnhardt and Bobby Labonte and stuff, all these Coke drivers. But yeah, this is big. I would say this is big news. It probably happened in the offseason and we missed it, but, like, this is big news because Hendrick has been so aligned with PepsiCo for so long. Obviously running Mountain Dew cars, Jeff Gordon running Pepsi cars for all those years. This is the first time that they have not been sponsored by Mountain Dew, and so they were open, or PepsiCo, and they were open to be able to, you know, have a Coca-Cola driver now, which is cool. Makes more sense for him being a Georgia boy, right?
We got Burger Wars, we got Soda Wars, we got, man, what's next? Like, it seems like any big brand that's been in the sport for a long time now, for whatever reason, this year is, Wendy's is coming after McDonald's hard. Pepsi's coming after Coke. Like, these big corps laying off people. Now they got this ad spend ready to go.
It's absolutely nuts. On people.
Watching the 500, you couldn't go 10 minutes without Wendy's being mentioned. It's not just the commercials itself, but they're cutting to Greg's and then doing this in-car interview. It's like, that's not an interview, that's an ad, because they got Wendy's plastered all over the thing. So Fox is even sneaking in, not just Fox, NASCAR in general is even sneaking in ads on these in-car
everywhere.
Cameras everywhere.
By the
way, it's like,
good job by Gregson. I saw, you know, him hyping up Wendy's so many times during the weekend, and he's like a really good spokesperson for them.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I love the guy.
Yeah, same. Cool. This was a thing that kind of, like, came out on Twitter. I actually, like, I saw it. It didn't bother me, but basically what we're talking about is the dithered first-person view cameras. And what I mean by that is, like, the blurring out, essentially. And with the first-person view cameras, when they're stable, right, and they don't move around, it's pretty easy. You can just, like, block out exactly where the heads-up display for the driver is, or the dash is. But when the person's, like, moving their head around, those new cameras that they have, which are super sweet, by the way, they still want to maintain the same amount of privacy for the team, not showing off exactly what they have on their dash, not showing off telemetry to other teams. You know, that makes sense. They need to do that, honestly. So anyone on Twitter thinking, oh, what are they giving away? Dude, the guys are blocking the window on qualifying to get an advantage, okay? Like, what you have on your telemetry is a big fucking deal. And so I think the dithering didn't bother me at all. How'd you feel?
This was a big hit for me and the people I was watching on Discord with. It was one of those things where folks that don't watch a lot of NASCAR, they're just here because the Daytona 500 is a Super Bowl-type event. Someone mentioned, what are they doing with when they're going to these in cars? What is that scrambled part of the screen? And just quickly explained, like, well, that's where the driver's getting a lot of their key technical information, and they don't want other teams to be able to go on their feed and see the in-car information. So one person in general was like, that's pretty amazing that they can, these cars are bouncing all over the screen and the thing just stays scrambled. So it's a really cool piece. It doesn't bother me at all broadcast wise. I don't know how you could be up in arms or bothered by this. Like, what are you going to get as a fan from seeing that information? Like, you're not going to be able to digest that in any way that makes sense. Very small part of the screen that keeps the race competitive and keeps the playing level a little bit more fair. So I don't have any problem with it whatsoever. I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's a fine trade-off for the cool view that we now get. Which, granted, they had been doing views like this by connecting to the helmet, but it's in various ways before. But, like, this is the best it's ever been. And they showed that camera at one point. It's super small and super, super cool.
Yeah, it was, like, smaller than the size of a dime, or about the size of a dime, I want to say. It was incredible. It's just cool stuff.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we were going to talk about amount of commercials. We kind of hit that pretty hard on the head.
Yeah, a lot of other podcasts have kind of beaten that into the ground as well. So sure. Let's move on.
All right. Well, let's move on to rapid fire.
All right. I'll jump in on rapid fire here first. So the one thing I've been kind of wondering about, and just coming off my Super Speedway comment earlier, is do we think NASCAR needs to move away from the green-white checker so we actually run the amount of laps that the race is? What are your thoughts on that?
This was my first rapid fire question.
Was
well.
It really?
Yeah. So
great minds think alike.
Yeah, it's all good. I think they do. I do. I think, like, finishing under green is great, but you are essentially finishing under green, knowing that you have to race aggressively up until those final, like, two laps to get yourself in a position where if the caution comes out, like, as you've hit the white flag, it could end 100 feet later. Right? Like, the race could end. And with how these super speedway cars are, how the runs can come, how guys get disjointed during the final couple of laps like that, I feel like you could see multiple lead changes in the final lap, just because guys need to be aggressive early because they need to see what's going to happen, if it's going to, you know, finish under yellow, versus guys laying back. It happened in the Xfinity race, for instance. Like, guys were running around in line up until the very, very end because they knew they could. I don't like that. No, you got to be aggressive, and you got to know that it could end under yellow, and I think that's fine. In the same way that we're making differentiation for the stage racing at the road courses, not calling full course cautions, just like awarding the points and continuing the race. That's good. You got to do that there. These races deserve to finish like under yellow sometimes when that happens, and it's fine. I think NASCAR does a pretty good job, by the way, of not calling yellow if they don't have to. They didn't do a good job of as Fox actually showing us how they made the determination as to who the hell won, either the 500 or the Xfinity race, because both of those came down to, you know, a caution coming out on the white flag lap. So I think green white checker is only extended distance if the caution happens between like 3 to 5 laps to go and you need like the extra lap or two to make it work. But everything else beyond that should not be a green-white checkered. And another caution that comes out during the green-white checkered attempt should not happen. So,
I've been binging on a bit of YouTube NASCAR this week coming off the 500, and I just watched the Radioactive of the 1998 where Earnhardt won his first 500. He doesn't win that race if they have green-white checker potentially, right? Because that one ended under the yellow and the flag. So,
It's happened a lot.
I think we're at a time here where it's time to take a real hard look at this because I'm not kidding. It seems like every super speedway race we're going one, two, three overtimes just because you get to those two laps and it's like they're just wrecking each other for wrecking sake. It seems like I would like to see a real hard look at this because it seems to be becoming a problem. And I was texting with my dad during the race, and he goes, I think we're going to be here a while after the first one. I go, reply back, we're definitely going to be here a while because there's no way, like, they're just going to wreck again, it seems like, every single time. So I'm of the opinion where we've got to take a real hard look at this.
Yep. And just, are you also just at these tracks, or are you for other tracks as well?
I'd like to see it everywhere.
Okay, interesting.
I want to see them run the number of laps or miles that the race is and have a winner. You're going to get some cleaner finishes, but...
Noted. I will say that never bothered me before. I mean, like, we've seen some really awesome green-white checkered finishes because of that existing, but if they change the rules so that you can only get one green-white checkered finish, and it can only happen if the caution happens on, like, three laps to go or before that, and you just need to extend the distance, I'm okay with that everywhere.
I like that.
You know, that
like
is that is further than the distance sometimes, but it really is just because, like, the caution came out pretty late, and, like, we needed to clean something up, and what if that takes five laps? I don't want a guy that, you know, is leading at five laps to go to just automatically get the win.
Yeah, that seems a little extreme. I would agree. At a certain point, you got to have a cutoff.
Yeah, so I agree. We can tweak that. All right, moving on to my second question, since you took my first. What's your, like, ideal streaming service look like for NASCAR? And you know, if you can compare it to something else, if you have a good streaming service that you like, and I really want to hear your comments on commercials on that too.
Ideal streaming service for me, I'm willing to pay a decent amount of money to get a streaming service if there's no commercials. I do not want to be paying for a streaming service if I have to sit there and watch commercials. So I'm an NBA League Pass subscriber.
Yep.
I don't pay for it. I get it for free with my season tickets, but I think League Pass is only $100, $120 or something for
110, I think. Yeah.
The season, it's nothing if you're a big NBA fan. I just had the Celtics versus
Pacers
game on earlier today, and it was an absolutely fantastic game, like 142 to 138 overtime, like really good action on the stretch. I can go watch any game any day of the week I want for, it's like $110 if you're paying for it out of the box. So what I'd like to see for NASCAR is I'll pay like $100 for full streaming of races. I would like to be able to see like Truck, Xfinity, Cup, be able to see some driver cams. I don't think that is too far out of the reality of where we're at with streaming services these days.
Yep.
It's just a matter of, is NASCAR going to pull the trigger on this, or are they going to really just go all in on their next TV deal?
Yeah, and it's interesting because NASCAR just did away with their, I forget what they called it, the subscription service that they had so that you could watch like in like driver cams and stuff fully during the race. But I'm totally with you. Game Pass is, like, in my opinion, the perfect sports, like, streaming thing, and honestly doesn't cost that much, and it's totally worth it for what it is. Now, the thing I would couple to this is, like, I want to see, like, NASCAR series as well as, like, what Flow Racing has. Like if we could do Flow Racing, but to the extent of, like, I can watch a Saturday night short track race on demand or, like, a Wednesday night race somewhere, and then also be able to tune in on Sunday if I want to, then that makes it super worth it for me. But you're totally right that, like, even just paying for less commercials, or I'm even okay with them showing some commercials as long as they're all side by side, that's okay with me. But, like, I don't want to have to, like, lose a green flag lap to a commercial, period, if I'm paying for a subscription service. So
I'm the exact same. So I just looked it up. Flow Racing is $149.99 a year. Yeah. Or $12.50 a month.
And granted,
equivalent.
You know, yeah, events wise, like, you know, they probably need to up that price a little bit more. But you're getting what you pay for, and then for the rest of the events, you can watch them on TV if you want to. If you don't want to pay for that, you can watch them on TV. It's exactly what you have if you don't have NBA League Pass, right? You watch the games that are nationally televised, and that's what you deal with. So, at least in this case, you're not forced to pay anything to be able to watch the full event. The other thing that I really want too is, like, I want to be able to see all of the post-race interviews. I want to see a post-race, like, breakdown.
Absolutely.
Like, I want all of that. Like, I'm not done with the race just because the race finished. I want to circle back on a couple of the storylines. I want to see how everyone did. Hell, Fox didn't even tell us how the drivers did. Kyle Larson took a really, like, Dale Earnhardt, like, head-on
shot. That was
shot
crazy. He hit the wall so hard, and they never once gave you any indication did he get out of the car. I've got to go to Twitter after the race and see if Pacras is tweeting they got out of the car. That's
exactly. Yeah,
I mean,
that's
extremely
annoying.
Popular driver right there. Like, you got to give me some information if the guy's safe or not. That's the biggest part of this sport is when they get in a wreck, is the guy safe, and is he going to be able to get in the car next week?
Yep, exactly. So,
the one thing that I'm curious about on that, though, one more thing on the streaming is, like, I keep hearing or seeing on Reddit, people are like, oh, I'm getting these international feeds, these Saudi Arabian feeds of NASCAR. They've got no commercials. I'm like, what are we doing here that you can bootleg a stream, probably sync it up with MRN. I'm a SiriusXM subscriber, so I can listen to any race I want on the SiriusXM NASCAR channel. MRN, like, I think their calls of the race are a hell of a lot better than what we're doing on the Fox broadcast right now with Mike Joy's fine, but I think we've got work to do on the other two guys. Their names are escaping me right now. Stewart and
Clint Boyer, which
they've just got no energy on some of these races. And I, like, in the summer, a lot of times I'll do this. I'll just go out for a walk in the afternoon on a Saturday or Sunday when the race is on, and I'll just flip on MRN and, you know, get outside to get some fresh air. And it's like, these guys are telling me exactly what's going on. I know who's up front, who's making a charge, who's having trouble. It's like, you watch the TV coverage and it's like, what are these guys talking about? Give me some actual information about the race. So that's the one thing that confuses the hell out of me is how can you get some bootleg stream where there's no commercials and I'm stuck here watching 200 laps of the Daytona 500 on side-by-side / commercial fest.
I will say for F1, because, like, F1 is what's spoiling fans right now. ESPN has deals to not show any commercials during the race. Like, that's what's spoiling fans for sure. But I don't know that that's true in other countries for F1, or for watching the F1 races. I don't know that you have commercial-free races. Again, I think it's, like, easier to do when the sport is smaller. As soon as you get enough viewers, it's like, well, damn, we can make some money.
Yep,
here,
now they can ramp it up and make some money. So
it just makes sense. So I get it. To your point, though, by the way, about on the MRN thing, I really love that you can watch different broadcasts on NBA League Pass, and that's exactly what I want, to your point. I want to be able to listen to the MRN guys or listen to someone completely different, honestly, like just a couple sets of people that are watching and broadcasting the race. So
Yeah, good question there. I'll jump into my next one, so... Where are you at on the current stage of Super Speedway racing? Do you like what we're seeing with the new car, or would you like to see some changes?
I think it's fine. I think it's, like, closer to what fans were clamoring for in the, like, late 90s, early 2000s, where it was, like, true, real pack racing. You almost have to, though, versus in the 90s, it was, like, it was slightly you had a slight advantage to being part of a pack, but then you could pull out and you wouldn't lose that momentum like you were talking about before, right? And so, like, I think it's close to what people wanted. That said, I mean, tandem racing was probably the most exciting Super Speedway NASCAR racing, also the most dangerous for sure, but, like, some of the most exciting racing that we ever had. I kind of want that back. It's hard to say. I don't know that Super Speedways are the most entertaining races all year. They're definitely the easiest for a casual fan to watch for sure, but not for me. And so I'm probably not the best person to ask on this. So what about you?
I'm okay with it. It's not great. It's not terrible. I think it's kind of right where NASCAR needs it to be. It's you get some good racing. We had a decent amount of passes under green flag. The thing I absolutely loved about this one was the strategy for pits. Mm-hmm. You'd see certain manufacturers, they're coming in at the same time. You see they're coming around the corner and you see 12 cars just all going towards the pits at once. And you've just got this mad scramble, mad shuffle of who's up front, who's coming off pits, trying to get back up to speed. That was super, super exciting this year with how heavy the first half of the race was on green flags, the first two stages. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was absolutely fantastic, just seeing how one little slip up on a green flag stop and, man, you're way in the back working, grinding your way through the field. So
isn't that some indictment on the racing, though, if the pit stops and people coming to pit lane and coming out of pit lane is some of the most exciting parts of the race?
That's probably a negative. I'm going to put that out there, but yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's not great. It's not bad. I think it's kind of just fine right now for me. I'd like to see, I don't know what happened with this new car where you just can't get any energy and you don't get those lanes moving like they used to. I'd like to see that come back a little bit, but I don't know what they can really do about that. I think I think we'll just see. And Talladega, even at Atlanta this year, with that being kind of the more super speedway feel.
Well, I think
we'll
Atlanta's
see what
more entertaining, for what it's worth. I think
Atlanta's
more
definitely more chaotic.
And Daytona, like, of the three, if we consider Atlanta to be kind of a super speedway, it's not lengthwise, but sort of a super speedway type of race. Like, Atlanta and Talladega are better than Daytona, right? So, like, as good as Daytona is facilities wise, and it's a great event, and all of this kind of stuff, overall, it's like it's the last in its class. So, in terms of the racing action, in my opinion, so, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how the next couple go.
Cool. Well, I did not come up with another question for our rapid fire. Do you have any more?
I've got a silly one, if you don't mind entertaining that. So,
yeah, let's do it.
This one spurred for me on our Wendy's talk earlier. So we've got the Burger Wars. If you had to eat one fast food chain for the rest of your life, between McDonald's or Wendy's, who are you going with and why?
I was probably going to go with Taco Bell, to be honest, or Popeyes.
No, man. Burger Wars. We're sticking to the
Burger
sponsors
Wars.
Here.
Man, just those two. Wendy's. I think it's Wendy's. I think Wendy's is better. What about you?
I'm going to go McDonald's just because they got the breakfast. They got some salads. They got the McFlurries. Like, I think there's enough at McDonald's that...
All right, well, here's what I got to call.
Can keep
have
me entertained.
Have you had that Wendy's breakfast?
I have not.
Get you a honey butter chicken biscuit, some extra honey butter, and you'll edit that thinking. I mean, I like a McGriddle, I guess, too. But, I think Wendy's wins the breakfast wars, too.
Not an ideal situation with either, but you got to go with what you got here.
This is like last case scenario when I'm like traveling or driving long distance and need to get something, you know? Like that's the only time I'll go to either of them, so I'm not.
Excellent.
Again,
you got a silly one to close out rapid fire here, or should we move on to a new guy reads the standings?
I love it. Well, that brings us to the end of rapid fire. And on to Baby G reads the standings.
We gotta get the standings read, and it looks like Baby G's stepping up this week. So
I love it.
I'm a little nervous here. What do I do? Playoff position? Just who's in points? What's
I think
the...
just call out normal points, and then this all is right. How I want to do it all year. And I'm gonna talk to a new guy about this. Call out normal points. You can leave out and then do like the top 16, the people that are gonna make the playoffs essentially. And then if there were winners that were outside the top 16, you could call them out. Obviously, our winner is inside the top 16.
All right, right on. So let's get right into it here. Big Joe, Joey Logano, 52 points. Chris Buescher, 50. Ricky Stenhouse, your Daytona 500 winner, with 48. Christopher Bell, 44. Alex Bowman, Mr. Ally, with 41. Ross Chastain, 38. Ryan Blaney and Kevin Harvick both have 37. The Dinger, AJ, 34. Martin Truex, Brad Keselowski, both with 32. Daniel Suarez with 30. Alec Almirola and Austin Sindrick with 29. Corey Wajoy currently in the playoffs with 27. And rounding out this top 16, Travis Pastrana with 26.
Yeah, you can kind of knock him out of it just because he won't be
running.
Yeah,
he's not going to be running
so
the full,
Kyle
full
Larson
schedule.
With
but Larson there with 24 and 17th.
I mean, notice this always happens. I mean, when you start out at Daytona, because it isn't like the guys you expect to finish well aren't up top, you know, kind of thing. But like, notice the big difference that you get in just one race. I mean, Joey Logano with 52 points, currently ahead of Ricky Stenhouse, who won the race, right? That comes from stage points and things like that. He has a good 28 points over the last place in the current playoff standings, really, right? So like, That's a big jump. I mean, that's a whole, you know, really bad race for that guy and a really good race for you. Bit of difference. So
it's interesting on the manufacturers too. So we got 7 Fords, 7 Chevys, and 2 Toyotas currently looking in the playoffs. That gets us to the 16. So
yeah,
pretty even split between the Fords and the Toyotas. That was one of our questions from our season prediction episode. So
true.
If you haven't listened to that one, go back and see what our season predictions were.
Look at you plugging that stuff. I love to see it. I think we also had from that, who will lead the most laps at super speedways. Right now, that's Brad Keselowski with 42 laps led, and his teammate Chris, and you know, he owns the team, but Chris Buescher with 32 is in second. So RFK, if the RFK can do that all year, it'll be one of those two for sure. Cool. I think that brings us to the end. You want to take us home?
Yeah, that brings us to the end of the Big One podcast. So 1 points race down. Quite a few to go. So NASCAR season's a long season. We'll be kind of recapping races. We'll be sticking to our regular schedule most of the time this season. So if you want to talk to us on Twitter, hit us up at podcastbigone. Anything email, we'll often take questions via email. That's podcastbigone@gmail.com. This has been Baby G with your first episode of season 4, Point Race. First Point Race episode.
First Point Race. Yeah, fourth episode. We're doing good. We're off to a great
start. Yeah, we had off-season clash, Daytona, predictions. We're off to a bang this season.
You love it. And this has been B-Boy, new guy, hopefully going to join us next week. I think he's snowboarding right now, so that would be why he's not here. But either way, thanks everyone for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Catch you later. Bye.
Bye.